Hello and welcome to the Nights Broadcast. Thank you for joining me. With you as always, I'm your ever so humble host, Tim Tapp, coming to you live from historic Rome County, Tennessee. Thanks for being with us tonight. I'm having a bit of technical issues. Surprise, surprise, trying to get things started. However, we're about to get things underway. And as part of that process, I still have to make a phone call to get this evening's guest joining me off of the top of the show. So if you will please bear with me, I will be playing a little bit of the Hillary stuff, and then we will get back on. Bear with me. I'll be right back. And now this. Here at Tap Into the Truth, we are trying hard every day to help save our republic. And one of the best ways that we can do that is to make sure that Hillary Rodham Clinton does not become the next president of the United States. So, I'm asking you for your help. If you happen to be a person that has evidence that can both indict and convict Hillary Rodham Clinton, please contact me at 555-TAP-INTO-THE-TRUTH. Once we have the information, we'll verify it, we'll take it to the authorities, and then I will personally assist you in getting involved with the Witness Relocation Program. This program will help keep you safe from the forces of... What? I'm on the air. Yes, I know the Witness Relocation Program is run by the Department of Justice. Yes. Oh, yeah, the Department of Justice. If you're a person who has information that could lead to the indictment and conviction of Hillary Rodham Clinton, then run. Go now. There's no time. Leave your phone. They may already be on their way. I'll do everything I can on this end to try and help buy you more.
We're sorry. The number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back, and right now I am joined live by Christopher C. Horner. Christopher is the author of several best-selling novels, several best-selling books. The most recent is The Politically Incorrect Guide to Global Warming and Environmentalism, and he is also a member of the Washington, D.C. think tank, the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And right now, Christopher, thank you very much for being with us this evening, and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
All right, Christopher, here recently you were talking about, in particular, this secret pact, the group of 17 different state attorney generals, which have decided to kind of work together quietly, trying to protect themselves from sunshine laws and things of that nature. The whole idea here is to create and prepare for prosecutions for climate change. Folks that they refer to as deniers, however, we generally call them skeptics.
Mm-hmm. People who stood in their way. Yeah. I think a little chronology is in order here to figure out, to really get perspective on this. They're calling it a common interest agreement, which is actually, those are common. They're tools used in legal practice when you have a matter of common legal interest and you want to, you are entitled to privilege. This isn't that, and I can explain why, but here's what happened. So we've obtained records through various states, what I'll just call FOIA laws, Freedom of Information Act laws. And these came because the day after a press conference in New York with Al Gore and numerous attorneys general announcing they would use whatever tools were at their disposal to go after clearly opponents of a political agenda. They were clearly going after inconvenient political speech and using clearly abusing the police powers, the law enforcement, the awesome power of the attorneys general offices to do so. I and colleagues sent in several FOIA requests to numerous states because that's just an instinct all listeners should have. I even wrote a book about it called The Liberal War on Transparency with a how-to guide. You have to get these records. They belong to you, not them. Find out how this this microphone you paid for is being used. So we get one production from Vermont pretty quickly. And complying with the law in that instance seemed to burn, it blew up in all their faces, and they've all begun a very orchestrated stonewall. But in that first production, we saw that they had drafted, New York had drafted a secrecy pact to, under the, they're calling it a common interest agreement, but there is no common legal interest. There, it's very, very broad, and these things have to be somewhat clearly tailored. And there's no action. There's no reasonably anticipated litigation. It was just simply to write themselves a get-out-of-FOIA-free card. And it turns out it's because they talked about all sorts of political agenda items that people are standing in their way of and they want to go after. By go after, I mean there's a three-prong plan. They want a massive settlement fund. I mean, we're talking about billions every year, essentially protection money. It's a shakedown. These suits are not designed to win. They're designed to settle, which is why all the AGs except one have fled so far now that they've been exposed. A vow of silence, in other words, not to oppose this agenda anymore, and a vow not to support people like the public interest groups I work with who make policy and legal arguments against this scheme. So we find this out. We found out a bunch of AGs are doing this and that they don't want the freedom of information laws that they all were subjected to, obviously with great foresight by their legislatures, to apply to them for this instance. And so anyway, we begin pushing and we're getting records out and we're in court now. We filed two lawsuits against the New York Attorney General, two against the Vermont Attorney General, one against the Rhode Island Attorney General. Two more are coming in the next week, possibly this week, because they clearly, as was also telegraphed in the same document, have agreed to make anybody sue to get anything, to get the records we, the public, own. Some are less brazen. As I've said, some AGs, they all have fled. Some left a paper trail. The Delaware Attorney General, when notified that these FOIA requests were coming in, promptly unsigned the agreement and said, gentlemen, I will not be participating in your worthy effort. Obviously, he noticed that this isn't going to look very good when people start looking at it. Iowa fled. They called Schneiderman, Eric Schneiderman, the New York Attorney General who orchestrated this, a wild card in an email and wanted nothing to do with it. And others have disappeared since. Now that there are, I mean, there's a motion pending in Washington, D.C. courts against one of these AGs for sanctions. This was so abusive. That they're probably, I mean, there are clearly civil and even on its face criminal consequences for people who are getting together like this. So that's a big dump of background about what's going on. It is, as you said, it started off with a dozen and a half AGs. They've all fled, but Schneiderman from New York, the Massachusetts Attorney General, is now the subject of an order from a federal court as of last week, exposing her to having her records about this reviewed because the court expressed, quote, concern about possible bad faith in the way she went about this in pursuing a company, ExxonMobil, because, again, it's plainly a political agenda. It's not a legal scheme. It's even the recruiting letter, which we can get into, they just said we want to make people use more renewable energy and make this non-binding Paris Climate Treaty reality by going after our political opponents. It's absolutely disgraceful.
You know, it never ceases to amaze me the degree that certain people who almost always seem to be leaning to the left politically are willing to go to in their quest to reach their goals. It's always the ends justifies the mean bit, because these are people who knew what they were doing essentially was illegal. They knew they were operating in bad faith, and I guess that's a big reason why they've all kind of disappeared, as you said. Beyond what little bit has happened, is there any real legal recourse that you foresee befalling these AGs?
Yes, several. And this will take a while to play out, but please understand, we're moving at light speed in some senses, because we first saw this on a March 29th press conference. And we had documents exposing what they were up to, some. and I'll tell you a funny story about that, but some of them by mid-April. These state FOIA laws, people need to know, you are entitled to a very quick turnaround. Now, in this secrecy pact, they have a paragraph that we're to notify everybody else, send out an APB, call to arms, and cooperate with each other, and actually consult with these, consult with other, like New York's Attorney General, is to be consulted by the Rhode Island Attorney General, the Virginia Attorney General, and so on. When a Virginia resident sends a FOIA request, the Virginia AG promised to ask the New York Attorney General if he should comply. Now, this is just preposterous, okay? So one of these email threads, and I'll tell you, as always happens in any old Western, thieves fall out, right? Usually when it comes time to split up the loot, but these guys fell out a little sooner. So Vermont produces first. And again, it blew up in their face. They've stout. Now, Vermont is the one office that expressed concern about making people sue to get records. Well, they've gotten over that after they got burned by complying with the law, apparently. But Vermont released an email thread, and this was cited by the federal court in Texas on Thursday night, in which one of these contingency fee lawyers they had brought in, named Matt Pawa, had notified Vermont and New York's attorney general that a reporter was calling, what should he do? And the New York Attorney General said, my ask is that you not admit that you briefed us. Because right before the press conference, they had this guy and someone from the Union of Concerned Scientists brief them all before going out there and saying they were going to use racketeering laws against their political opponents. Well, the court in Texas said this looks really bad, hints at bad faith, and or I'm going to allow discovery, not against the company, but against the attorney general. Hurrah for them. Well, what Vermont failed to find somehow, it slipped between the sofa cushions or ended up in the shredder. Vermont did not produce its contribution to this conversation, which New York then turned over to make Vermont look bad, like any of these guys need anybody else's help. So New York then produces part of the thread in which Pawa says, good, I thought that made good sense, this request to mislead the reporter. And then Vermont's deputy attorney general thanks him for agreeing to do so. So it's funny, Vermont couldn't find their own email. They found New York's, in response to which New York found Vermont's. And they buried it in 260 pages of chaff that we didn't ask for, but you know, they did let it out there. But there's all sorts of intrigue here. They said that we're going to claim privilege for consulting with what they call outside advisors, and it turns out it looks like it's donors, political donors, that the company ExxonMobil filed an action in New York yesterday or day before saying it looks like at least one of these guys, Schneiderman, is using this to raise money, and also asking that his subpoena be denied, and I assume look for discovery with him too, because there are donors that we've learned about who have been meeting with these guys asking for this. We have emails going back to July of last year in which one of these folks who was briefing them, one of their outside advisors from Union of Concerned Scientists, who's telling academics, because of course the faculty lounge is involved, he's telling academics who are agitating for the Federal Department of Justice to use RICO to go after opponents, this is a bad idea. But we're working on a state-level project, parentheses, e.g., AGs, close parentheses. In other words, he said, attorneys general. This was July of last year before any AG subpoenaed anybody. Well, that's devastating. And there is no way that's not going to end up in court, probably very soon. So we're finding this scheme. We know when it was cooked up. It was cooked up by private parties funded by the Rockefeller brothers in La Jolla, California in 2012. And they were trying to figure out how to do this, and they got some AGs. They wanted to find some attorneys general to use slash abuse their powers to go after political opponents because they couldn't. And by the way, this is the big flag. They're not getting what they want through the proper democratic process, so they want to use law enforcement to get you to shut up. Well, you know, the democratic process is you don't always get everything you want right away. I'm sorry. I mean, the poor dears are suffering through largely winning, but they're not winning in every zip code. And so they want to use AGs to break people financially. these academics are talking about big settlement funds. Gee, where do you think that money would go? Well, they said in interviews, probably to, well, what they do for a living. This is to your question, this exposes them in several ways. First, of course, they can face counterclaims, civil rights counterclaims, because they're seeking to deprive individuals of their right to speech, political speech, which is, of course, still, no matter who you are, a protected right. That is something that individuals, groups who have been targeted by this. In fact, one think tank I work with received a subpoena from one of these guys who's now facing sanctions, asking for 10 years of records, darn near everything, okay, beginning 20 years ago. Well, again, they didn't think anybody would push back. I don't know if they realized what they were doing was wrong, but when the prospect of FOIA requests came in, some of them, you know, like cockroaches, just fled, because at minimum they knew it sure doesn't look good. But the fact that they entered a secrecy pact to try to keep this from the public and said we want to keep our work with, quote, outside advisors, which appears to include donors, obviously activists and contingency fee lawyers and so on, who are pushing this, they wanted to keep it secret. That tells me something. Again, they're trying to go around the democratic process because they failed. They're also subject. Right. There's a law professor at Tennessee named Glenn Reynolds called Instapundit. He wrote a piece in USA Today very, very early on in this saga, pointing out that, you know, this also violates the criminal code. If we had a Department of Justice that was interested not in going after us, and this attorney general has admitted in a Senate hearing she's considering it, they would be looking into this because it violates the criminal code of the federal criminal code. And I think it's 18 U.S.C. 241. They are two or more people combining to deprive individuals of their civil rights, including, yes, their right to speech. So these people face several potential actions. And frankly, their office doesn't entitle them to do this. Whatever they're doing is outside the scope of their office. So they're personally liable, too. This was not very well thought out. As much as it was schemed for quite a while, I don't think it was well thought out, because it was such an abusive, bad idea. They knew it wouldn't look good. That's obvious. But I don't know if they realized really what they were doing. I mean, it's so phenomenally abusive.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like a case of them expecting to be able to bully people into doing what they wanted. And almost like they felt comfortable with the current federal administration, thinking that the Department of Justice wouldn't pursue them anyway. So they probably thought they could just meander this for a while and get away with bullying long enough that eventually nobody would question it anymore. It's a good thing that there are watchdogs that are watching. Go ahead.
I'm glad some of them push back. I mean, I think nobody expected this. We just sent FOIA requests because you see this going on. You know, offices being abused. I have a feeling they picked this company because they were voted most likely to settle, and because they were on board with a lot of the agenda. They'd stopped supporting people who oppose it. They were saying, "Yeah, carbon tax, we can pass that through." I mean, all sorts of, you know, leave us alone type body language, I guess you'd say, political body language. And instead of taking that as leave us alone, these AGs took it as a sign of weakness and decided that they'd be the first to settle. And if they did, it would make it very difficult for others not to, right? I mean, that was the point. They want a big fund, and they want all their records, and they wanted that. Obviously, you can't destroy an industry that provides something for which there is no viable alternative, but you can turn it into a golden goose to pay for your buddies and your cronies and your industry and all these guys lobbying for this, right? So I don't think they expected anybody to fight back, and no one expects the Spanish Inquisition, but apparently nobody expects you to fight back either or ask for the records.
Right. Well, I mean, it's been a case where, let's be clear, the particular state AGs in question, they were all Democrats, right?
The only exception was a nonpartisan office, a guy who used to work for the current administration in the Virgin Islands. Yes.
All right. So he has strong Democratic ties, though. Okay. let's face facts. These guys are used to getting their way by doing exactly that. They intimidate, they name call. It's everything that they can do to manipulate. And yeah, absolutely correct. I think that there is absolutely no way they thought anybody would call them out on it. And they obviously pulled the same little Friday afternoon document dump kind of maneuver they do through the press department. And that's, they throw so much information out at you at a time where they're hoping you're not going to be able to sort through all of it.
That New York email I got that was getting back in Vermont was actually a Friday before Labor Day document dump. Yeah, Friday's afternoons are very busy in this business, I'll tell you, because that's, they have to release things, though they're making a suit for everything, and it usually comes Friday about 5:35.
I guess that's not too much of a surprise. All right. Well, first of all, thank you for your work with trying to bring this information to light to the public. I think there's absolutely no question that the more people who know about this, the better off everyone will be. Wanted to switch gears just a little bit and talk about the your most recent bestseller, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Global Warming and Environmentalism. Tell me a little bit about what led you to write this particular book at the time you did.
Okay, well, I had, how do you become a global warming guy? I was, as I say, innocently practicing law in Washington, pause, wait for laughter, and then a company asked me to be director of federal government relations. It was everybody's favorite company. It was at the time the Clinton-Gore White House's favorite energy company. It was the governor of Texas's favorite energy company. Everybody loved them. They were called a free market pioneer. In fact, the company was Enron. And that lasted about 3 weeks because on my second or third day, I was in a meeting and I was with a bunch of what we call rent seekers, their industry looking to make their money the old fashioned way, which is getting favors from buddies in government to rob Peter to pay Paul, and they're Paul. And as they say, when you rob Peter to pay Paul, Paul's got your back, you're guaranteed Paul's enthusiastic support, and sometimes the idea was even Paul's. And that's what I found here with Enron. I was in the room with BP, Niagara Mohawk Utility, Gas Association, Union of Concerned Scientists, a bunch of other equally measured groups, and we were all sitting around a table in a now bankrupt but big New York law firm's offices in Washington, and they were scheming, they were trying to figure out how to get a global warming treaty, and I was completely blown away. I was a fully grown man, but I had not been exposed to this. It was like, as I say, there's an old Far Side cartoon where two cowboys, they've circled the wagons, and one of them turns to the other and says, hey, they're lighting their arrows on fire. Can they do that? I'm in this meeting where you've got Union of Concerned Scientists and Enron and BP trying to figure out how to, divide everything up. And I asked the guy next to me, what in the world? And he laughed and said, well, they're trying to put other people out of business first. And I raised questions at Enron, and it really didn't go over very well. But what happened was I wasn't fully briefed on their business plan, which was, in this case, to buy things on the cheap because they're not economic. They bought the world's largest windmill company right before I joined them. And then they set about, Ken Lay was a very savvy political capitalist, he set about to work government to add value to this, that is to create schemes whereby they could essentially support people to terrify the public into accepting wealth transfers to their uneconomic loser technology. Windmills, they're new, right? Actually, they're from the 80s, 1887. So they're just still living in their parents' basement for 125 years, the taxpayer, actually since about the 70s. But they're just commercial failures, same as solar, about 1891. And they're actually contemporaries with the things they compete with. But they figured out that, to quote another Far Side cartoon, where two spiders spin a web at the base of a playground slide, and one turns to the other and says, if we pull this off, we're going to eat like kings. Well, that's pretty much what the world looked like to Enron and BP and others, that if they could just get this global warming agenda, remember, it's never solved. Nothing ever proposed would detectably impact the climate. There's an actual consensus on this. Even if you accept these lurid PlayStation taxpayer-funded computer models they run, which is what the entire edifice is premised upon, even if you accept all of these assumptions, which reality, looking at the window, shows you should not do, even if you did, none of these schemes are anything but the step toward the next one. After the Kyoto Treaty was agreed, within a week, Science Magazine ran an editorial apologizing. Oh, did we say salvation? I'm sorry. This is the first of 30 treaties, as they said. Yeah. Well, no free society would actually subject itself to what this calls for. But a lot of guys can get rich in the process, right? And a lot of seniors can die, as is happening in the countries, from hypothermia, from what's called energy poverty, in the countries where the president told us to look if we want to see how it's going to turn out. No longer gives that speech, by the way. So after my Enron experience, I had said this is – I ended up going to the Competitive Enterprise Institute as a fellow and working on this issue because I was just blown away. It was what we call Baptists and bootleggers. You get the green groups who seek prohibition but of energy sources that work, and you get the bootleggers selling the stuff that doesn't, that would do really well if, you know, government got involved. So – it was, look, let's go through all the polar bear stuff, and let's go through all of the, you know, Mount Kilimanjaro was melting because of man-made global warming. How do you know? Because Mount Kilimanjaro is melting. Well, that's like the CIA brought the World Trade Center down. How do you know? Well, the World Trade Center came down. your conclusion is actually an assumption. I just relate the experiences I had. I mean, a Washington Post reporter, after Enron collapsed, suddenly was interested in, you know, I'm muttering on the street corner for 2 years about this evil company trying to make money off of doing nothing. And then suddenly they wanted to talk. And after I finished telling him the whole story, he tapped the pencil to his forehead and said, I suppose I could say you're telling me they weren't that bad after all. And I looked at him and said, where did you get that? And he said, well, I mean, global warming. Like, oh, good. Oh, I see. So that's just like a pixie dust. I can just throw in whatever I want. Well, global warming. I mean, as the precursor to these attorneys general, they used to call for, I quote these people in my book throughout, and the book Red Hot Lies, chapters and chapters on their claims for, they demand, quote, Nuremberg style trial for these expletives deleted. That's me and others. Right. Because, you know, global warming. Okay, I didn't realize you said global warming. So I lay all that out, and just some – in the Politically Incorrect Guide series, there's a format to help you go through, okay, when they're going to say this, and then and here's what you can know in response. And just went through some of the myths, and that led to actually another book, Red Hot Lies, which walked through these totalitarian impulses they have and the scheme sort of when the establishment attacks, a whole chapter on this about just more of the same, how they want to lock people up and Nuremberg-style trials and the impact of these policies, which, you know, we now know in these countries where President Obama used to tell us to look but doesn't anymore. You're killing seniors by the tens of thousands because – you said you were going to make electricity rates necessarily skyrocket. Well, gee, what happens to the most vulnerable when you do that? Hadn't thought of that, had you?
All right, sir. Well, I'm going to have to wrap things up tonight. But again, I've absolutely thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and I would very much like to have you on again sometime, and we could further discuss this. I want to thank you again for your efforts to expose this little shady dealings that's been going on, and hopefully we can eventually get everybody on the left realizing that you can't just keep doing this. We really are starting to catch on to their tricks. But if somebody wanted to find your work or find some way to contact you, social media, what have you, how would they do that?
Through CEI.org, Competitive Enterprise Institute, or EELegal.org. Where you can find constant updates on this litigation and the revelations and a lot of the documents and keep up with it. I send updates out pretty regularly through Twitter, Chris_C_Horner.
All right. And if you're happening to catch the show a little bit later, you find it in one of the many places that you can catch the podcast, whether it's at iTunes, Stitcher, over at the Spreaker, wherever. There are links to Chris's website and CEI.org in the show description, as well as the Amazon link to the Politically Incorrect Guide to Global Warming and Environmentalism. Again, thank you very much for being with us today, Chris, and Godspeed, and thank you for being here.
I appreciate that very much. Thanks a lot.
All right, sir. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Christopher C. Horner, and it is my pleasure at this point to actually, I just lost her. sorry about that, Annie. Just clicked out. I'm having all kinds of issues. The first issues today were mine, and then I've been battling BTR issues since I've signed on. Show's just an hour tonight. Annie, if you don't mind calling back in, because you are no longer on my board, I am about to have as a guest Miss Annie Ubelis, better known as Annie the Radio Chick, host of Southern Sense. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Annie joining me live. Thanks for being with us today, Annie, and how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Just loving the way Blog Talk Radio kicks me out all the time.
Well, you know, BTR is really good at doing that for a lot of folks. before we get into today's main conversation, I wanted to talk to you about this. I wanted to go ahead and thank you again for having me on guest hosting just a little while back. I guess it's been almost 2 weeks now. Enjoyed what little bit of conversation we got in there, but it was a phenomenal show. And to be honest, I was just sitting back and enjoying the conversation that we had with Susan when we were talking about Under the Shield.
I host a show. I didn't know that. I just thought I said, put the guest out and just sit back and listen too.
All right. Well, Annie, one of the things that's really kind of been disconcerting about this political cycle is we have probably seen a little more agitation and actual physical violence. A lot of it's been surrounded with the Trump campaign. Some people claim that it's authentic. Other people claim that it's been stirred up. I think there's plenty of evidence that it's been stirred up. This kind of, I don't know that it's come to a head yet, but one of the most recent events was this GOP headquarters in North Carolina that got firebombed. And I really wanted to get your take on that, mostly because I know how active you are in your hometown and in your county with both your GOP and with the Tea Party. What is your first impressions with this?
Oh, that's political terrorism. That is, as my friend Eric Golub calls it, political idiocy. You know, you don't see this coming from the right. We don't see Republicans attacking Democrats, but yet you see news reels after newsreel of the left attacking conservatives or Republicans. You know, you have it where you get the PACs are now in collusion with the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign. You've got David Brock doing it. You've got now Fogle was doing it, Creamer doing it, and with direct connections to the DNC. So are you really questioning why it would go from that down to a firebombing? No, it's just the same progression. It's the same people. You know, they have them out there at the Trump campaign agitating, looking for fights. You have them in there causing any type of trouble at any sort of a rally. So next thing would be a firebombing. But they talk about the firebombing in North Carolina. They don't mention in another neighboring county in North Carolina, twice in a two-week period, shots were fired into the GOP campaign headquarters.
Well, and that really has been something that's been kept relatively quiet, and it's mostly regional media, not a lot of mention in the national. And yeah, I think that's probably still a symptom of the bigger problem, that being that for the most part, our mainstream media is pretty well in collusion with this.
Oh, that it is. I mean, it is amazing how you won't find anyone in the mainstream media talking about it. You do get a little on Fox, but, you know, they're so busy talking about the debate that's going to go on in less than an hour, rather than talking about the attacks on political freedoms and free speech.
Yeah, it's frightening, really. Has this caused you, in your capacity with your local activities there, have you guys discussed increasing your own security, or have you felt the need to do that yet, or are you feel safer in your community?
Well, I'm not exactly sure, because I've got my GOP meeting tomorrow night, and I'm sure that's going to be discussed in the meeting. And when I had my Tea Party meeting just this past Wednesday, I cautioned everyone to, you know, be aware of your surroundings. You know, be careful. If you're putting bumper stickers on your car, just know where you're putting it, parking your car. Keep an eye on the other vehicles around you. Just warning everyone, basically, to use a little common sense and try to protect themselves in case there is an attack coming on them.
I would imagine this is that point where that former NYPD training is really starting to kick in.
Oh, man. It's I've always been aware of my surroundings. Very rarely am I unaware of them. And that's an important thing for people to do. You know, you may be thinking you're safe walking down the street with your cell phone as you're texting, but that is when you are your most vulnerable. If you're wearing a deplorable, adorable T-shirt with writing on the front and back, and you're not paying attention to who is around you, then you're leaving yourself open. Oh, am I still there? Did I get kicked off again? Hello? Kel says she can hear me. Tim, it's on your end. But I'll cover until he gets back on air. If you can hear me, Kel, just give me a wave. Okay, great. All right. Thank you, BTR. Now you kick the host off the show, as if they haven't done that to me before. But, you know, it is really odd with this North Carolina bombing in the GOP headquarters, because shortly after that, there were some tweets going out by a Democrat out there saying, hey, listen, guys, why don't we take up donations to help rebuild the campaign headquarters? So they set up a GoFundMe page. And the funniest part is that in a matter of 4 hours, the GoFundMe page had collected over $10,000 to help the GOP. Now, these are Democrats who collected the funds to go to the GOP to help them rebuild their headquarters. And you think that is really great. That's wonderful. And yes, it makes the Democrats look like good guys, and maybe their Democratic candidates will get a couple of pats in the back and a couple of extra votes on November 8th. But lo and behold, the North Carolina Elections Commission comes in and says, no, you can't give the GOP DNC money. You cannot give them these donations. Each and every donation made has to be an individual donation, so you cannot collect these donations on GoFundMe. So they're trying to figure out what the heck to do with more than $10,000 that is intended to help rebuild that GOP headquarters. So right now, the DNC is got their attorneys working on how to get this money to them. So I think it's funny as all heck. You know, here you go, someone that's associated with the Democrats do a firebombing, and now the Democrats are going to pay for the damage they did to this GOP headquarters. But the North Carolina Election Commission says you can't give them the money because it's not going to be a legal donation. Can life get any crazier than it is right now? I really mean, can life get any crazier? But that is what is going on, folks. And, you know, this is political terrorism. You know, to call Republicans Nazis, to call anyone a Nazi is abhorrent. I can't even think of my word I want to use, but it is. It's nuts. The closer they get to the election, the more they are doing crazy stuff. And, you know, I'm wondering, how close is the election? Does anyone know, to a full moon? Because it's got to be close, because, I mean, I swear, getting crazier and crazier and crazier. I've never, ever in my life have seen an election cycle as nuts as this is. And if this is what American politics is delving into, what happens next in another 4 years when we're up for another presidential election? What happens in local elections? I mean, are you going to go out in a full fist fight to see which candidate gets the office? You know, let's see. Throw the Republican and the Democrat inside a boxing ring and see who comes out the best after 10 rounds. Maybe that's the best way for us to choose a leader at this point. Whoever can swing the best and fastest. Yeah, I don't know. Let's hope Tim can get himself back into his own show, because you're listening Tap into Truth with Tim Tapscott. And unfortunately, Blog Talk Radio has kicked him out. But hopefully he'll come back on real soon. You know, I don't know what to say, guys, because I came here to talk to you with him. He was supposed to interview me. So instead, I'm interviewing myself. maybe, I don't know, maybe he'll get up in here soon. So I'll just keep on rambling on. And I'll tell you what, because I've got coming on my show, which you can find on Tuesdays and Fridays, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on Blog Talk Radio. I've got my friend, former INS agent, Mike Cutler. He'll be talking about the refugee resettlements, illegal immigration, border security. I'm going to delve into the H-1B1 visas. And if anyone has heard Mike on my show, I just ask a single question or prod him in one little way, sit back, and for the next 20 minutes, Mike talks on his own. One of the easiest interviews I ever done was with my friend Mike Cutler, who has his own show on BTR on Friday evenings at 7 o'clock. What the heck? Oh, the Mike Cutler Hour is what he calls it, and where he talks about immigration. But I got to tell you that even though he's a Democrat, when you listen to him talk about immigration, border security, H-1B1 visas, refugee resettlements, and on and on, he sounds like a complete, complete conservative. But then you get into social issues where he and I have debated on those, but we do that between ourselves because we're good old friends. I've known him since 1989, so I can do that. You know, everyone, I got to tell you, everyone has to have one progressive or one liberal in their life just to keep your sanity in there. And Tim is putting up in the chat room that he's trying to get back into his own show. And I'll tell you what, Tim, I could not Skype into my show at all. So maybe if you try using that direct connect or even direct dialing in, I'm telling you, Blog Talk Radio is having a heck of a time. I mean, I called in using my landline, and even then they kicked me out. But Kel is right. I am referring to Mike Cutler. And in truth, I met him when he was investigating the death of my friend Bob Machete back in 1989. And if no one knows the story, Bob Machete was a New York City cop, and he was murdered by an illegal alien. An illegal alien that Mike Cutler, a few years earlier, had personally escorted out of the United States because he was an illegal alien who committed crimes here in the United States. So he got the deportation, sent him over the border, sent him back home, and lo and behold, he makes his way back and ends up murdering a New York City police officer, my friend Bob Machete. And Mike Cutler went and caught him a second time and helped send him away for prison for killing a New York City police officer who was killed in the line of duty. So it's going to be a great show that I'll have on Friday. And then next week, I got Derek McCoy. He works with Star Parker in Cure, Urban Cure. He'll be joining us. And we're bringing back Albert Guillory. He, if you remember him, he was a Democrat that publicly changed from a Democrat to a Republican because he felt the Democratic Party has just gone too far left. And in truth, he is a conservative. I've had him on the show before. We interviewed him, asked him hard-hitting questions, and I think if he does get this election seat, if he does make it to Congress, he will be an awesome, awesome congressman. So he'll be joining us. And I am working. There's a guest I'm trying to get on. I was expecting a phone call or an email today, but possibly tomorrow. James O'Keefe, Project Veritas. I spoke to his secretary just a couple of hours ago, and she's checking his schedule, and it looks like he may be joining us the first week of November. So fingers crossed, and let's hope he doesn't have any conflict of schedule, and I'll get him on. Because I want to talk about those new videos that James O'Keefe brought out about the election fraud that's going on, the videos that he's been putting out. And if anyone listened to my show back in January when I was doing the broadcast from the South Carolina Tea Party Coalition Convention, James O'Keefe was signing books right next to me, and I grabbed him. I had him on the show, and he alluded to the fact that he had something really important that was going to blow wide open before the election. And he gave me that this little, he's got the cute little boy smile. He really is a good-looking guy, and he's tall, too. And he gives me like a little boyish grin and a little wink, and he says, it's going to rock your socks off. And I says, oh, my goodness, I can't wait. And lo and behold, out come these videos with the Democrats in collusion with the DNC and the Clinton campaign, working with PACs, which is illegal, and then disrupting rallies, actually ripping up ballots. And it's crazy. And I hear a noise in the background. Is that you, Tim? I hear in the background.
That is me finally getting reconnected to my show. So thank you for pitch hitting for me there, Annie. And since you were in the middle of a really good story, I didn't want to interrupt. So I'm just having all kinds of luck tonight. I'm beginning to think I probably should have just kept off BTR and watched the debate tonight. I absolutely did not get to hear anything that you've been saying, but I am so glad that everybody else could still hear you and that the connection was there. I have had this particular issue with BTR and a while back. I had it for like 3 weeks in a row where just randomly towards the end of the first hour or right at the beginning of the second hour, it would just cut me off and it would not let me reconnect for a while. And then I did everything BTR said that I was supposed to do. Nothing seemed to work. And then just suddenly it stopped for several weeks now, and now it's right back at it. So, again, thank you very much, Annie, for stepping in there and taking care of business for me.
Well, BTR did the same thing to me on my show yesterday where I could not even Skype in. I was trying over and over and over again, and then the next thing I know, I tried it with direct connect, and again, three times it kicked me out. Finally, it let me in. But when I normally call into my show, I Skype, and then I use a landline, and I couldn't even get in with the landline on your show tonight. It took me a couple of tries. So it's not your end. It's BTR, honey.
Yeah. Well, I figured as much. I mean, once, twice, that might be me. Consistently, there's something going on. And yeah, this is a funny thing. Every now and then, just to keep tabs on the other side, I'll occasionally listen in to some of the liberal talk shows here. I have yet to come across any of them that are having this same issue. So I don't know if that's coincidence or I don't know.
I don't think it's coincidence because, like you said, I sometimes check in other people's shows, just randomly pop in, and I don't hear about any of these problems, but it will be on a conservative show. Cal has had it happen on hers, on her show, and she just mentioned it in the chat room, and it's happened a lot to me. You know, there are weeks where I'll go without anything bad happening, but I've had it where my co-host couldn't call in. I've had it where listeners couldn't call in. So it's not us, it's them. So there may be someone on the BTR side that does not like conservative shows.
Well, I think it's been pretty well. Yes, exactly. I do think it's pretty well documented. The folks that are running BTR do tend to lean a little to the left. And by a little, I mean they're almost falling over. But that's another topic. You know, I told you you were very gracious. I got a hold of you very short notice. I happened to notice that you were very vocal about this particular issue. And, you know, one more question I wanted to ask about that before I kind of started towards letting you go, since I told you it'd just be a few minutes and now you basically took over the show for me for a little bit. And again, thank you. Do you think that this is still an anomaly, or have we reached that tipping point where while this firebomb, these shots fired, it seems to be a step up that we're only going to see more and more of this in future electoral cycles?
I don't think this is an anomaly. I think this is a symptom of what the actual problem is. And I think we will see additional attacks on conservatives, Tea Party people, Republicans. Each time it happens, you're going to see someone trying to claim they're going to pull the reins in. But in the interim, you got people like David Brock in the background laughing his butt off because this is exactly what they were aiming to do. You've got Fofo out there that's salivating it when something like this happens. They do want to disrupt. They want to intimidate. They want to keep our voices down. They actually want to shut us down any way possible. And that's why I warned my Tea Party people out there. I said, just be careful and be aware of where you are and where you are. Keep your cell phone ready so that if something does happen, you can dial 911. And, hey, guys, South Carolina has carry law. I mean, it's not an open carry. It's a concealed carry. But, hey, make sure you are carrying. You know, defend yourself and let them know. We will fight back if you attack us. It's called self-defense. It's called stand your ground, or here we call it castle ground. You know, protect your life. But don't agitate. If they agitate right. against you, you have every legal right to react and defend yourself. But also, let's get these idiots behind bars where they belong.
Absolutely. You know, it boggles my mind that we've reached this point. Did it surprise you any at all that it happened in North Carolina as opposed to a more of an urban setting? Or is it at this point in time just absolutely no difference as far as what's going on across the country with this anger and this level of vitriol?
Well, I was surprised it happened in North Carolina because North Carolina has been red for a while. That is what surprised me. I thought it would have happened in a blue state. But then again, North Carolina is vital to the electoral process. So I guess maybe that's what they were thinking. Let's hit states where the electoral votes are in jeopardy of turning to a Republican. And this is what I think, honestly, was their reasoning behind it.
Yeah, kind of a tactical thing to try and, if nothing else, maybe scare away some Republican voters away from the polls come election day kind of mentality.
Exactly, because if they do this to the headquarters, if they do this to the building, what would they do to me if they knew I was going to the poll to vote? I mean, they did this in the South during the Reformation. You know, there was the Gary plan that said that, and this was a guy who was a Confederate general, went on to be a senator in the state of South Carolina. He came up with those red shirts that intimidated black voters and Republican voters when they went to the polls to vote. And his plan was that every white Southern South Carolina male should control at least three black males. And that was their voter intimidation. That was to keep the Republican vote down and take back South Carolina to the Democratic Party. And now they're pulling the same thing again. They're doing it once again.
Well, you know, I definitely want to reiterate to everybody exactly what you said about being mindful of your surroundings. Pay close attention, because while this has been kind of limited to this point, or at least we haven't heard nationally about very much of it, it's certainly likely that we're going to see more of it before this election cycle comes to an end. Annie, again, thank you very much. And before we do anything else, I wanted to get real quick, what do you expect from tonight's debate between Trump and Hillary?
Oh, you know, that's going to be really hard to answer because I know she's been practicing really hard, and I know Trump is now practicing. I think he's going to do pretty well. For him, he's got to take it. He's got to win against her. And if he can keep his temper down, and if he can deflect any questions about this sex scandal that they're trying to lay on him, if he can keep on deflecting the subject from that and put policy forward, then he's going to win over a lot of voters.
Right. Well, I got to tell you, I was a little surprised he didn't hit her a little bit harder in the last debate. I would kind of like to see him open it up, but again, maintaining his composure. So yeah, I would very much like to see that. But at this point, I'm not sure that this debate really has much of an impact on the election. In fact, I think most of the people, I was saying earlier today, I think most of the folks that are going to be watching this debate are probably the same folks that watch NASCAR for the entire race. And that's because they're just waiting to see the wreck. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Hey, wait a minute. I'm a NASCAR fan.
Well, I did say most, which leaves that exception. But yeah, I mean, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, but one thing I would say, even though everyone's going, oh, Chris Wallace, he's going to do a great job. If anyone remembers what he did and Megyn Kelly did in the primary debate, I don't think Chris Wallace is going to be as favorable to Trump as he will be to Clinton. Honestly, I expect him to go slamming Trump. I don't expect him to be nice to him at all.
Yeah, I know I heard some folks, again, people I were talking to earlier today, where they were hoping that maybe he would hold Hillary a little more accountable towards actually answering questions instead of her usual deflection. And, you know, he might, but I really don't expect Chris to do things much different than what we've already seen in the previous debates. So I think you're dead on with that.
I'm going to challenge your listeners, if they're going to watch the debate, let's all play the drinking game and take a sip every time Hillary Clinton cackles.
Well, now, Annie, I have to go to work in the morning, okay?
Oh, well, it has been a pleasure, Tim, because I'm going to sit down now and get the TV warmed up for
the Clash
of the Titans.
Just real quick before we go, Annie is the host of Southern Sense. You can find her show live on Tuesdays and Fridays from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., and you can find the podcast version at her website, southern-sense.com. I do have a link to that website in the show description for those of you who catch the podcast later. Is there anything else you'd like to throw out there real quick about your show and anything that's upcoming?
Oh, I already did that while you were off the air.
Okay, well, there you go. I'm the only one out of the loop. I'm sorry. Thanks again, BTR. Thank you very much, Annie, and I hope to talk to you again real soon.
All right, good night. God bless.
God bless. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Annie Ubelis, and I got to tell you, I love her very much, and, you know, she is always really, really good when it comes to any topic, because she's knowledgeable, she's on point. But there's also another really, really good and knowledgeable and on point host who's going to be joining me this Sunday, and that is Kel Fritzy, the Red Fox blogger herself, the infidel your imam warned you about. And I think I've got her talked into a full hour, so I'm going to try and get that started at 3 p.m. Eastern time. At least that's what we're going to try to do. And I'm very much looking forward to that conversation, because Kel has been nice enough to have me on her show on three separate occasions now. And I'm kind of looking forward to the opportunity to flip the script a little bit and get to ask her the questions about what she's been doing and for how long and all that great stuff. It is absolutely been a pleasure, what little bit I've gotten to speak to everyone tonight since I've had all these technical issues. But at any rate, in the last few minutes, so it's time to close things down. A special thank you to both of my guests, Chris Horner and, of course, Ann Ubelis. And, of course, a special thanks to Mary in the chat room, along with Kel. And Annie's been hanging out in the chat room and conversating with them there as well. So thank you very much, guys, for being with us tonight. And remember, don't take my word for it. Definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Be prepared to put in a little bit of effort if you really want to tap into the truth. That's it for tonight, everybody. And go watch the debate, everybody. And, you know, Annie's idea of a drinking game, if you don't have anything to do or you don't have to drive anywhere, jump right in. I'm going to close out with Hillary's accomplishments and then Miracle. Good night, everybody. And now, in some surprising breaking news. For months now, Hillary Clinton has been under pressure from her adversaries to release a list of accomplishments that would qualify her to be President of the United States. And now, in a surprise move, she has done exactly that. I take you there live. That does seem to be the complete list. This has been a Tap into the Truth campaign brief.
I'm looking for a miracle.